This is Matthias Spallina from the MFA program of Virginia Commonwealth University. It's Wednesday, February 13th, 2002, and I'm at American University speaking with Henry Taylor. What is it about Brother Dave Gardner that compels you to continue writing in his voice?
That's a very difficult question for me to answer with any great precision. It's partly mysterious to me. The process so far has been a matter of my suddenly having jump into my head whole little sketches, which when I first think of them, I can say without visualizing where the line ends might end up being. And so I take them home and I write them down and I look at them and think about where the line breaks would go. I think it's fair to say that I probably first conceive of them in prose. I think I conceive of them pretty much in the voice of Brother Dave Gardner, and it's been suggested that I'm just, you know, channeling, that he's speaking to all of us through me, and I have limited ability to be completely sympathetic with that view of things. I'm a little bit of a left brain sort of person, but there is a convincing aspect of it, which is that these things just jump into my head almost fully formed. They don't require a lot of work. Now, the question that you ask also seems to me to imply some curiosity about why a fellow like Brother Dave Gardner would be of interest to a fellow like me. And that's where some of the mystery lies. I think he was some kind of a comic genius. I think he had a gift for a certain kind of surrealistic slant on life and the sort of out of left field one-liner that make me laugh. I'm also aware, though, that there's a very racist side to his humor, which I think is very unfortunate.
What's your personal connection to Brother Dave Gardner?
I have very little personal connection with him. I saw him live once near the end of his career, or near the end of the first phase of his career. He was at the peak of his popularity, I suppose, in the late 50s and early 60s. At that time, he was appearing on the Jack Parr Show, which was a forerunner of The Tonight Show, and he was making stand-up type monologue recordings with RCA Victor, and they were doing pretty well. Sometime in the late 60s, he came through Roanoke, Virginia, and I went to see him there. A minute ago I was saying that there is this racist side to his humor, which I think is very unfortunate. I'm not willing to declare his entire effort off limits for that reason. I know that there are people who think that, for example, we should dismiss Thomas Jefferson because he was a slave owner. I can't go there. I wish he were not a racist. I try myself not to be. It's a matter that requires effort, I'm afraid. And that's not the fault of the races. It's the way the situation is. If I'm walking down the street at night and I would like not to have my pulse rate change in a strange part of town among a suddenly arriving group of young African-American males. I'm not sure that I can pull that off.
You'd mentioned that the poems in Brother Dave Gardner's voice come to you as sketches, and I'm wondering how those comedic forms fit into your formal sense of poetry and how formal considerations bring humor out in your work.
In my experience, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of predictable affinity between traditional forms and humor or free verse and humor. My early poetry, when I first began to write sort of snapshots, as I call them, little anecdotes with punchlines, they tend on the whole to be free verse, even if they're metrical, they're unrhymed. Much more recently, I've done an entire book of Clarihues, which are rhymed. In between, there's a group of poems that have been appearing very intermittently and in various disguises that make them hard to identify. But they're sonnets spoken by or about an imaginary character that I developed back in the 1970s, a fellow named Desperado. I don't know what his real name is, but Desperado is what it says on the bug shield on the hood of his pickup truck. And of the sonnets in The Flying Change, I think there are maybe half a dozen or so sonnets in The Flying Change. There's one about my son climbing on the stairs and stuff called Green Springs the Tree. It's not part of the Desperado series, but all the other sonnets that are in that book, I believe, are part of that series. They just don't happen to mention him by name or seem to need the other poems to be intelligible. But there's a kind of rapscallious, smart-ass quality to those poems that I think is related to Brother Dave Gardner. So it would appear that at some level, despite the fact that I'm a university professor and wear neckties and stuff like that, there is something about a kind of backcountry, reckless humor that appeals to me at some very deep level.
Do you differentiate between humor in that way and literary wit in poetry?
Yes, I do. I think that wit is not necessarily humorous, and I value it. And like to think that from time to time I use it. But if I want to write a poem that is primarily funny, that's all I'm trying to do. I don't do this exclusively, of course. It's not the only kind of poetry I write. And I was talking not too long ago to my friend Billy Collins about the fact that it's very, very surprising to people who come to hear a poetry reading to discover that the poet is able to be funny. And there's a kind of huge relief about that. So the effect is that it takes a very small proportion of humor in a poetry reading to make people think the whole reading was funny as hell. You know, you read for 50 minutes, and if 10 of those minutes make people laugh, then they will go away thinking, boy, that's a really funny poet. It's an odd phenomenon. You know, if a comedian had that kind of proportion, he'd be an absolute failure.
Do you think bringing humor into poetry causes the listener or reader to have a different mindset in accepting the poetry?
Quite possibly. I'm not interested in that question as a strategy for composition. I mean, it's an interesting question to be asked by a reader, but it's not related to my goals. When I write a poem that I hope will be funny, of course I hope that the reader will laugh at it when it's done. I mean, it's like telling a joke and hoping that people will find it funny. You hope they will. What I'm up to, though, is has to do with the way I think the world works. I think that the world is funny more often than a lot of serious artists have found ways of demonstrating that it is. There's something about being a serious artist that calls forth, on some occasions anyway, a kind of solemnity. I remember noticing a poet whose work I admire enormously is Galway Kinnell. And if you go through the whole sweep of Kinnell's work, you notice that it takes him rather a while to get to be funny. And then it's as if he suddenly thought to himself, hey, this is all right. And it coincides more or less with his becoming the father of the boy Fergus, who is now obviously a man. But in the old days, he was a little boy. And some of the things that Galway writes about him are beautifully combined observations arising from the profound love and nearly inexpressible hopes that one has about one's children, along with the the basic hilarity of the present situation, whatever it may be. After making love, we hear footsteps is a poem that comes to mind. I think that finding a way to get the funny part into an ordinary experience, instead of straining out the serious part and leaving the funny part behind, I think it's, I've always just found it an interesting technical challenge.
You said just now that you find the world funny in a way that not many artists have been able to convey. Is there a divide between what can be said well in poetry with humorous intent and what can be said well with serious intent? Or are there subjects that do not warrant a humorous approach?
Well, obviously, there are things that it would be very difficult to be funny about. That's true whether you're talking about poetry or ordinary conversation. And there's a kind of humor that is thought in some quarters to be reprehensible. A number of years ago, there was that terrible disaster with the Challenger space vehicle when the astronauts and Christa McAuliffe were killed. And the speed with which jokes about that accident traveled across the country is remarkable. It's almost as if some of them were in the air before the craft hit the water. Now, some people found them funny and some people found them extremely distasteful. That's neither here nor there in terms of my point, which is that there's a kind of consensus about when it's okay to start being funny about something. I can't imagine, at this stage of the game, I can't imagine anything funny to say about the destruction of the World Trade Center towers. But I think it's beginning to be okay to make jokes about President Bush.
I think that might have been what I was trying to approach from the back door. Do you think there is humor in even such tragic topics that you would be interested in delving into in poetry?
Sure. Not every time. I mean, I have plenty of poems that are, on the whole, straight-faced. I don't think of them as humorless, because that's another quality. That's a quality of not being able to admit of humor, which is different. But to exclude humor on purpose, I think, is a legitimate thing to do from time to time, maybe often. But the task, as I see it, is to try to be honest about the shape of the world and the kind of experience that comes my way. And I happen to have the cast of mind that makes more of that stuff funny than happens to some people that I know. A while ago you used the phrase something about artists being able or not being able to render the humorous elements in a situation. And ability is not really quite the issue. It's a matter of temperament in terms of how you see things, how you feel about things, what strikes you. I teach a course at the Writers' Center out here in Bethesda in traditional forms. And I think the Writers' Center is a great thing. I really salute the people who got it off the ground and made it go. It's been going now for 25 years. But when they first started asking me if I would teach workshops there, I wouldn't do it, because what they wanted me to do was teach workshops in how to write funny poems. And I don't think I could teach such a workshop. My position on that is that if you don't already know what's funny, I can't help you.
I guess you can't teach a sense of humor.
I don't think you can.